constructive solutions that people on a local level have employed to make a difference on a global level. Tabling at 5 o'clock with food at 5:30 and the movie showing at 6. Again, that's Reclaim Tomorrow on Monday, April 16th at 5 p.m. at Wilson High School, 1151 Southwest Vermont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. We're creeping up on 11 a.m., which means it will shortly be time for the Digital Divide, talking about Facebook testimony in front of Congress, internet privacy, and our personal accountability, such as making and maintaining a crucial community resource such as KBOO Community Radio. Are you a member of the KBOO Foundation? If not, you can correct that oversight at kboo.fm. You click on the little maroon rectangle with the yellow word donate printed inside it. We'll guide you through a safe, convenient, easy, and secure web form to make your fully tax-deductible 501c3 type charitable donation. That said, here's some more of what you support with your membership in the KBOO Foundation.
Good morning and welcome to the Digital Divide. I'm your host, Rabia Yemen. And today we are going to be talking about Facebook, an emotional subject for a lot of people. But we're going to be talking about Facebook. We're going to be talking about the Cambridge Analytica data scandal involving the collection of personally identifiable information for possibly up to and over 87 million Facebook users that Cambridge Analytica began collecting in 2014. So when I'm reading headlines that are talking about the Facebook scandal, I think they're improperly labeled. They should be called the Cambridge Analytica data scandal. The data was used to influence voter opinion on behalf of politicians who pay them to run sponsored posts, Facebook's word for ads, to post topical memes and comments intended to influence election outcomes. So today, we're going to hear some selections of Mark Zuckerberg's testimony to a Congress comprised of a frighteningly high percentage of adults ignorant of how social media works, as evidenced by some of their questions, which were unanswerable because some of the questions weren't logical or relevant to Facebook. Not all of them, but a lot. And it was worse in the House. They were more ignorant than the senators, maybe because there were more of them, but not that much more ignorant. Some of them demanding yes or no answers to questions that didn't make any sense. In December 2015, The Guardian reported that United States politician Ted Cruz was using data from Cambridge Analytica and from this breach, and that the subjects of the data were unaware that companies were selling their data and that politicians were buying it. In March 2018, the New York Times, The Guardian made more detailed reports of the data breach with new information from former Cambridge Analytica employee turned whistleblower Christopher Wiley. He provided clearer information about the size of the data breach, the nature of the personal information taken, and communication between Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, and political representatives who hired Cambridge Analytica to use the data to influence voter opinion. So I've got a lot more on that. And I think if we get towards the second half of the show, I've got some information. It's going to put a lot of puzzle pieces together about Cambridge Analytica, about the election, the players, and might make your mind just explode. So, you know, clear some space for that. Could get messy. I also am very excited. We're going to have Rachel Miller on the program today. Rachel is a, I want to get it right. And let's see, Rachel, there you are. An organic traffic strategist with Moolah Marketing. And Moolah Marketing is a Facebook training and education course that teaches you everything you need to know to understand how Facebook works and how to use it to go viral with organically and with a combination of paid or sponsored posts. When you hear the words Facebook ads, in Facebook language, they might call that a sponsored post or boosting a post. All of that means an ad. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like a product ad. You could boost a post of a video showing you how to make a pie. Anyway, we'll talk to Rachel. She will inform you. You'll learn so much from her today. So I think we're going to start out with just a short 8-minute segment, selected highlights from the Zuckerberg testimony. I think it's important, if you haven't heard it, to hear some of it. It'll be illuminating. And let's go ahead and play that clip, and then we come back, we'll get Rachel on the phone with us.
Facebook is an idealistic and optimistic company. For most of our existence, we focused on all of the good that connecting people can do. And as Facebook has grown, people everywhere have gotten a powerful new tool for staying connected to the people they love, for making their voices heard, and for building communities and businesses. But it's clear now that we didn't do enough to prevent these tools from being used for harm as well. And that goes for fake news, for foreign interference in elections and hate speech, as well as developers and data privacy. We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. And it was my mistake, and I'm sorry. I started Facebook, I run it, and I'm responsible for what happens here. It's not enough to just connect people. We have to make sure that those connections are positive. It's not enough to just give people a voice. We need to make sure that people aren't using it to harm other people or to spread misinformation. And it's not enough to just give people control over their information. We need to make sure that the developers they share it with protect their information too. It will take some time to work through all the changes we need to make across the company, but I'm committed to getting this right.
Mr. Zuckerberg, I remember well your first visit to Capitol Hill back in 2010. You spoke to the Senate Republican High Tech Task Force, which I chair. You said back then that Facebook would always be free. Is that still your objective?
Senator, yes, there will always be a version of Facebook that is free.
Mr. Zuckerberg, what is Facebook doing to prevent foreign actors from interfering in U.S. elections?
Thank you, Senator. This is one of my top priorities in 2018, is to get this right. One of my greatest regrets in running the company is that we were slow in identifying the Russian information operations in 2016. Now, I have more confidence that we're going to get this right because since the 2016 election, there have been several important elections around the world where we've had a better record.
Explain what is better about the record.
So we've deployed new AI tools that do a better job of identifying fake accounts that may be trying to interfere in elections or spread misinformation. And the nature of these attacks, though, is that, you know, there are people in Russia whose job it is to try to exploit our systems and other internet systems and other systems as well. So this is an arms race. I mean, they're going to keep on getting better at this, and we need to invest in keeping on getting better at this too, which is why one of the things I mentioned before is we're going to have more than 20,000 people by the end of this year working on security and content review across the company.
Mr. Zuckerberg, would you be comfortable sharing with us the name of the hotel you stayed in last night?
No.
If you've messaged anybody this week, would you share with us the names of the people you've messaged?
Senator, no, I would probably not choose to do that publicly here.
I think that may be what this is all about. Your right to privacy, the limits of your right to privacy, and how much you give away in modern America in the name of, quote, connecting people around the world.
Mr. Zuckerberg, quite a story, right? Dorm room to the global behemoth that you guys are, only in America. Would you agree with that?
Senator, mostly in America.
You couldn't do this in China, right? Or what you did in 10 years.
Well, Senator, there are some very strong Chinese internet companies.
Right, but you're supposed to answer yes to this question. Okay, come on, I'm trying to help you, right? I mean, give me a break. You're in front of a bunch of... The answer is yes, okay? So thank you. One of the key issues here is Facebook too powerful? Are you too powerful? And do you think you're too powerful?
Senator, I think most of the time when people talk about our scale, they're referencing that we have 2 billion people in our community. And I think one of the big questions that we need to think through here is... the vast majority of those 2 billion people are outside of the U.S. And I think that that's something that, to your point, that Americans should be proud of. Okay, and when I brought up the Chinese internet companies, I think that that's a real strategic and competitive threat that in American technology policy we should be thinking about.
Let me get to another point here real quick. I don't want to interrupt, but when companies become big and powerful and accumulate a lot of wealth and power, what typically happens from this body is there's an instinct to either regulate or break up, right? Look at the history of this nation. You have any thoughts on those two policy approaches?
Well, Senator, I'm not the type of person who thinks that all regulation is bad. So I think the internet is becoming increasingly important in people's lives. And I think we need to have a full conversation about what is the right regulation, not whether it should be or shouldn't be.
For years, Facebook said that there should be strict limits on the information the government can access on Americans. And by the way, I agreed with you that privacy is important to Nevadans. You argued that Facebook users wouldn't trust you if they thought you were giving their private information to the intelligence community. Yet you use and sell the same data to make money. And in the case of Cambridge Analytica, you don't even know how it's used after you sell it. Can you tell us why this isn't hypocritical?
Well, Senator, once again, we don't sell any data to anyone. We don't sell it to advertisers, and we don't sell it to developers. What we do allow is for people to sign into apps and bring their data, and it used to be the data of some of their friends, but now it isn't. With them. And that, I think, makes sense. I mean, that's basic data portability, the ability that you own the data, you should be able to take it from one app to another if you'd like.
Do you believe you're more responsible with millions of Americans' personal data than the federal government would be?
Yes. But Senator, your point about surveillance, I think that there's a very important distinction to draw here, which is that when organizations do surveillance, people don't have control over that. But on Facebook, everything that you share there, you have control over. You can say, I don't want this information to be there. You have full access to understand every piece of information that Facebook might know about you, and you can get rid of all of it. And I don't know of any other any surveillance organization in the world that operates that way, which is why I think that comparison just isn't really apt here.
One way to regulate a company is through competition, through government regulation. Here's the question that all of us got to answer. What do we tell our constituents, given what's happened here, why we should let you self-regulate? What would you tell people in South Carolina that, given all the things we've just discovered here, it's a good idea for us to rely upon you to regulate your own business practices?
Well, Senator, my position is not that there should be no regulation. Okay. I think the internet is increasingly important.
Do you embrace regulation?
I think the real question, as the internet becomes more important in people's lives, is what is the right regulation, not whether there should be or not.
But you as a company welcome regulation?
I think if it's the right regulation, then yes.
You think the Europeans have it right?
I think that they get things right.
Have you ever submitted? That's true. So would you work with us in terms of what regulations you think are necessary in your industry?
Absolutely.
All right. So there you have it, in straight from the proverbial horse's mouth, Mark Zuckerberg. Now, I want to be clear, my own personal position. I'm not defending Facebook today. They could have structured their ad rules to not allow users to give access to their contacts and friends. They have changed that now. You heard him say that used to be something that a user could choose to do. I want to use this app. The app says, okay, we're going to collect your friends' information and their profile information. And people would basically click, okay, I want to play, you know, the diamonds and jewels game or whatever they were doing. So I'm not going to assign motives other than profit to their actions or lack of action, which is more accurate. I'm happy that they're making changes. If you're a Facebook user, have you ever filled out a petition, a survey, played a game, a puzzle, taken a quiz, where you rapidly clicked agree, not knowing what you were really agreeing to? So that's the question. We're going to talk about personal responsibility for sharing data on any social platform. And I know some of you out there don't use Facebook at all. I hope that you'll be patient and listen in, and hopefully you'll gain a better understanding of what the platform is. We're going to talk now with Rachel Miller, social media genius and guru of the moolah marketing. And I have to make a full disclosure. I have taken her course. I paid for it. And learned so much about Facebook that I hadn't really previously understood. I had only thought of Facebook as a place where I hang out with my friends, where we share ideas and jokes and check in with each other. And after taking the course, I understood, first of all, how the recipe for making a viral post, getting more eyeballs for whatever your cause is, whether it's for a product or whether it's for an event. It could be for a recipe. It could be simply to engage more people and bring more traffic into your page or your group, your cause, your nonprofit, whatever it is. Facebook, I think of it as an environment. Sometimes I use the analogy or metaphor that it's like the freeway, and all the users are kind of like the cars on the freeway, and they bring what they bring to everyday life, and that Facebook simply provides an environment for people to connect, and they pay for that with sponsored posts or ads. So let's welcome Rachel Miller. Rachel, are you there?
Yes, Rabia, thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited that you're here. I can't think of a better person on a week like this, ending it with you on the phone. That's how I want to end my week, because it's been crazy with this Facebook story. So why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners and help them understand what you do and who you do it for?
Yeah. My name is Rachel Miller, and I'm with Moolah Marketing. And basically, I help people get eyeballs on their content. So if you are a nonprofit who is working on having more trees in neighborhoods, well, I can help you get Facebook into those neighborhoods so you can get your word out about having more trees planted in having greener neighborhoods or whatever your message is.
Right.
Yeah.
And help our, I think there's a lot of confusion, especially if you're not, you know, a Facebook user at all, or if you just use Facebook kind of on a cursory level to, you know, share pictures of your cats, which we all do, even though I don't have a cat. I know you don't have cats and I don't have cats, but we share a lot of cat pictures. I still love cats. Even, they make me sneeze. But people don't understand, like, an ad on Facebook, it might be, you know, a new combination water bottle / camp stove, or it could simply be a post that you made that is popular and you want to get it out to more people so you can pay Facebook, right? To boost or sponsor your post.
A lot of times, guys, it's just those ads are just pieces of content that people want to get the word out for. So for me, I have one of my sites was a preschool site. So if I wanted to talk about something that's important to me, car seat safety, I could create a post about that and push it out to the world and have more parents concerned, aware, checking their kids' car seats. So it's not just a place for ads, but I don't want that car seat, my car seat awareness content, I don't want that to go out to everyone. So right now, the other day, I opened up my mailbox and I had a mailer for roofing materials and I had a mailer for the AARP. And here's the thing, guys, I'm 36, so the AARP is not something on my radar just yet. But AARP and this roofing company are mailing it to everyone that's in this area for whatever reasons, right? So I got brought into that net. I'm on Facebook, I'm not going to see AARP stuff and I'm not going to see roofing stuff because Facebook knows the way I'm talking. Facebook knows my age. Facebook knows who I'm engaging with. And they know I'm more passionate about car seat safety for my children than I am about, you know, AARP. So they're going to deliver content that's relevant to me. So that's what the ads do and the ad system on Facebook. So when Facebook talks about targeting and delivering ads and sharing your data, it's sharing data with you so that they can be more relevant in what they deliver to you. So you don't have that pile of junk mail that we all have in your literal feed on Facebook.
Right, because I don't mind seeing new content on my Facebook feed, but like you, I do want it to be relevant to some aspect of my life. If it's really not relevant, then I click that little button and I'm like, this isn't relevant to me, or I'm seeing this too much, things like that. Facebook does give you that tool to use. But a lot of people don't know how to use the tools in Facebook. I did learn a lot about how to use Facebook from your course. I didn't necessarily learn how to, you know, tell the meme I already knew how to do that, you know, like, I don't want to see you anymore, but
I can tell your audience how to do that if you're in a post on Facebook and you don't want to see this type of content anymore. So let's say it's an ad, and let's say it's a car seat ad even, and you like car seat ads, but you've seen so many of them, you're sick of the car seat safety stuff. So you can click on the right-hand button, like over a post, there's going to be like three dots on the right-hand side, and you can click on that, and you can choose to mute someone if you've been talking to them and you need a break from that person for whatever reason for a little while. You can choose to mute them where you won't see them in your feed, or you can choose to hide that content. You can tell Facebook, I never want to see anything about XYZ or whatever it is again. So we have a lot of controls inside of Facebook. It's just hard because you don't know to click on those three little dots.
That's right. And I know a lot of people, if they're not, you know, just, you know, in the computer, you know, world, swimming around in it all the time might be hesitant to click on something because they don't know what the outcome of that click is going to be. But that is a perfect segue, Rachel. You know, I have to admit, I have been getting frustrated this week when I see people on my own friend list post responses to the Cambridge data scandal as simply Facebook sucks. And that troubles me because I'm not hearing from them any personal responsibility for having willingly shared their information, of course, or angry at their friends who may have unwittingly shared their information without their consent or knowledge. But there's
Remember, though, the amount of information that they're getting, think of it like, okay, 2 days ago, I actually went on Facebook and I looked up some of my old college friends that I hadn't talked to in years. So I went on Facebook and I typed in their names and I typed in, you know, and I went through the list, right? And I'm looking for like the cities of where I knew that they were last, right? I was able to find 4 or 5 of my old college buddies. It was really fun, right? Okay, I did that because their personal profile was public, their name was public, their birthday, and the city they were in. So literally that's the information I have access to. So when Cambridge Analytica harvested information, what they harvested was public profile information. So that's your name, your birthday, your page likes, and the city that you live in. It's not everything that you have on your feed, if that makes sense. You're not giving up anything that's not already public where we want to search for and find someone. So just like if you want someone to search and find you, if they're the long lost college friend, and you want your long lost college friends to find you if they've got something cool to tell you, right? If you want that information to be public, well, it's publicly searchable, kind of like a phone book. You have your name in the phone book, you have your phone number in the phone book, you have your address in the phone book. You can opt out of the phone book. It's the same thing. We can opt out and not be part of Facebook, or we can say we're going to be part of this online phone book.
Right. So I think what I would like to see, I mean, I would like to see, and I think I have confidence that Facebook is definitely adapting and responding to this situation, which we're going to talk about more when we're done on the phone about the Cambridge problem. I'm making air quotes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to, I mean, I understand. Even this morning, I clicked on something on Facebook just kind of as an experiment, and it took me to, you know, like another, it was like, if you want to use this other app that's connected, that can be connected, then do you agree to share this information? Usually I say no. But I think the user, Facebook users need to understand that they also didn't just take this information without anybody agreeing to it. Someone in every single case, now right or wrong, because I think it is wrong, you know, for it to be able to take your friends' profiles, but someone agreed to that, and they were probably one of your friends. And I have a situation where that I didn't fill out that My Digital Life thing, but someone I know did, and therefore it did access my friend profiles and my own profile. I took that little thing, and I just would like to see people taking more personal responsibility, and that might mean that they have to slow down a little. It might mean they have to take the time to read and think before they click. And we all get in a hurry, and we're just like, I just want to do it, click, right? Don't slow me down. I'm in a hurry, and I'm on internet time. But really what half of this whole scandal relates to the users not fully understanding how it works, not understanding or taking the time to understand that agreeing to terms of service is a real thing.
Yes. Well, and also think of like playing Candy Crush. When we invite all of our friends to play Candy Crush, we're telling Candy Crush who our social network is.
That's right. Right.
So we have to be aware that when we do that, we're telling Candy Crush, here's all my friends. Well, we're giving them that information. So they're using that information for a reason. So just be aware of that in every circumstance that you're using this. This is when you import emails and say, I want to have everyone from my email list be aware that I'm doing whatever. It's the same type of situation. So, yeah.
That's right. So, Rachel, you teach people how to, A, work Facebook on a deeper level than just clicking like. And you also teach people how to create posts that make Facebook happy to get more eyeballs on your cause or event. And where can people find out more about that?
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, of course. Rachel Miller on Facebook. And my Facebook group is Page Strategies.
Page Strategies, Rachel Miller, Moolah Marketing. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, we are going to now talk about, we're going to go back to Cambridge Analytica. And every time I see the words Facebook scandal, I look to see who the source is. I'm like, which news source is leaving out the Cambridge Analytica part? Because it's important. You know, most of the time, it's not what they tell you, it's what they don't, what's left out of news. But I want to just share with you kind of information about the scandal and Cambridge Analytica. And I want to put it in to a framework where you might be thinking about it completely differently. Now, to go back to Facebook for a minute, you know, Facebook has, right, the This Is Your Digital Life. That was one of the tools that Cambridge Analytica used to invite people to do some, you know, personality profile about your digital life. And then the user agreed unknowingly to allow Cambridge to then access your profile and your friends' profiles and to collect that information. And when they collect information that includes your page likes and what TV programs you watch, they're able to compile a pretty detailed psychological profile on you. But like Rachel said, you know, Candy Crush or Farmtown or whatever games you play or surveys or petitions, any of these where you have to click a consent before you use it, is doing the same thing. So as you can see, and as Mark Zuckerberg said in his testimony, Facebook doesn't necessarily collect all your profile information. Well, I take some exception. They have it. They do have it. They have an extraordinary amount of information, but they don't sell it, right? They have it, but they don't sell it. What they do is allow they sell ads that can incite users to click and fill out information. They provide a development environment, a computer environment, where third-party apps like games, like Farmtown, like surveys and petitions can connect with your profile and offer you the opportunity to interact with them. Typically requires sharing some kind of information in order to make those connections. So that is what that means. So there are thousands of apps, and Facebook is in the process of going through all of them to see that they're all in compliance with the rules, and that includes new rules that don't allow that kind of friends profile sharing, which does feel a little bit like a violation. But I want to go back in time to before the election. Can you remember? stretch your brain. Pre-Trump presidency, we're still in the election, okay? We're still in the campaign, and we don't have a primary candidate yet. We've got Cruz is running, and Ben Carson is running, and Trump is running, and a host of other candidates. And many of those campaigns also used Cambridge Analytica data. It wasn't just the Trump campaign. So let's talk a little bit about that. And as the Cruz campaign, Mother Jones has a great article, and this came from Mother Jones. As the Cruz campaign laid the groundwork for Iowa, a sizable chunk of its spending, about $4.4 million, flowed to the British company named Cambridge Analytica. Now think about that. $4.4 million of campaign money. That means that campaign donations, okay, donations of money from individuals, from super PACs, from the dark money. That's a huge amount of money that it went to buy data. The firm claimed to possess detailed profiles on 230 million American voters based on up to 5,000 data points. So a data point might be where you live, very important and relevant to the election, right? Geography was a deciding factor, really. Everything from where you live to whether you own a car, your shopping habits, your voting record, medications you take, religious affiliation, TV shows you watch. Not all of that came from Facebook, but however they collected that information, some of it came from Facebook. The data was available to anyone with deep pockets. Cambridge professed to bring a unique approach to micro-targeting techniques. It promised to couple consumer information with psychological data. Okay. Harvested from social media platforms, not just Facebook, and its own in-house survey research to group voters by personality type, pegging them as agreeable or neurotic, confrontational, conciliatory, as leaders or as followers. So that's really micro-targeting. It would then target these groups with specifically tailored images and messages delivered via Facebook ads, glossy mailers, in-person interactions, all kinds of social media and in-person, but also Facebook. Okay. So not only did it sell data, it created content for whoever was paying them to further that agenda. After Cruz and Ben Carson dropped out of the election, Trump's campaign manager at the time, Paul Manafort, he wanted to fire Cambridge for not delivering on many of the promises to the campaign. But he was afraid to rile up the owners. The owners of Cambridge Analytica, who are they? Who are those people? Or a company? Well, I'll tell you who they were. The Mercer family. The same Mercers that Jane Mayer talks about in her book, Dark Money. And the chairman of the board of Cambridge Analytica. Do you remember who that is, listeners, dear listeners? That's right, Steve Bannon. So what we have here is billionaires contributing to a super PAC, right, for the campaign funds that then spends money from the super PAC on data collection and messaging, millions and millions to Cambridge Analytica. That money is going right back in the Mercer's pockets, right? And probably making a tidy profit. Also, at the same time that Paul Manafort wanted to kind of distance the Trump campaign from Cambridge Analytica, suddenly he's out as campaign manager. Steve Bannon, Kellyanne Conway, they're in. The Mercers brought them in. The Mercer family has hand-selected many of the Trump cabinet members. They're not congresspeople. They're not senators. They're not House representatives. But oddly, they have had a huge influence on this administration by hand-picking members of the cabinet to further their agenda. So when you wonder where Betsy DeVos came from, you just look at the Mercers. That's where they came from. This information, every time I think of it, it just blows my mind. So that's the real story. Those things did happen. Anyway, I'm going to open up the phones for calls, 503-231-8187. If you want to weigh in on Facebook, the data sharing, I have questions for you. Let's talk about what our responsibility is for sharing data on any social platform. I know some of you out there don't use Facebook, so be patient. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about Facebook being the vehicle, not the perpetrator. They just let the Wild West happen without understanding the full consequences. 503-231-8187. Give us a call and we can talk about Facebook, online privacy. What do you think your responsibility is as a Facebook user or a user online? Have you ever filled out a petition or a survey, shared a game or puzzle? And rapidly clicked agree, not knowing what you were really agreeing to. 503-231-8187 is the number for you to talk to us live on air on the digital divide. We can talk about some more. Oh, also, let's talk a little bit more about the Facebook data scandal. The Mercers, the billionaires that pay Bannon, that they own Breitbart. They installed Kellyanne Conway. They own a huge part of Cambridge Analytica. And I'm not being coy. Facebook is free, and no one is forced to use it. So I'm not chastising anybody. I'm just saying that just saying Facebook sucks is overly simplistic. Okay, we have Carolyn Beaverton. You're live on air.
Great. I'm calling to say that what you just said, reading off the connections of this and that to whom, is an example of the old boy network. And that's all I have to say, and somebody else can chime in and add to it, or what? Okay, I'm going to sign off, turn my radio back on.
Thank you so much. Well, we could think of it as an old boy network, except that Rebecca Mercer, the daughter, who is more active in all of these political manipulations. I think that the phrase old boy network might be outdated. I know what you mean. The network of people that are connected and, you know, keeping all the money close to the vest, and just, in this case, spending it, donating it, spending it on a company you own and getting the proceeds back in the billions. Now, Facebook, not blameless here, right? It's my feeling that, you know, a company of that size is, well, it's big and hard to track all of its arms and tentacles, right? But they're not blameless. I personally feel like they probably didn't think anybody would use their data like this, you know, although that seems naive to me. So maybe it was a case of it's not broke, we'll fix it if it breaks, which is kind of the situation now. It's tarnished the company. However, after the testimony of Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook stock, it went back up from the little dip it had taken from the negative publicity. 503-231-8187. What kind of limits do you think social media should put on free speech? Where do we draw the line? Now, Facebook does have provisions in it. If you see hate, something you interpret as hate speech, bullying, offensive, you can click a little button and, quote, I'm making air quotes again, report that post or data as possibly being, you know, hate speech or critical. And then they will investigate that and they will get back to you. They have community guidelines. I've actually posted a link on today's episode on the Digital Divide of the Facebook guidelines. We have Ira in Beaverton live on the air. Ira, welcome to the Digital Divide.
Yes. The cheese is not really free in a mousetrap.
Okay, that's a little metaphorical. Okay, it sounds like we've lost Ira. He gave us a metaphor, but he didn't elaborate on it. I'm not sure what the mousetrap is. Maybe that's how Ira feels about Facebook, that it's some kind of mousetrap. I don't feel like it's a mousetrap, but I agree that it is free. It is free to use, but when you use it, it would be naive to think that, you know, the things that you, I mean, it's a public environment. It's not a private environment. Facebook is pretty public. And when you like things and when you post things, You're putting that stuff out there. So that is, again, a personal choice, personal responsibility when you're posting information onto a platform, whether it's Pinterest, Instagram, which you should know is also owned by Facebook, Instagram and Facebook. Whenever you post to any social media, Twitter, that you know, that information is viewable unless you have set up, which you can in Facebook, you can create different audiences for your posts. And when you post something, you can choose who you want to see your content. It doesn't have to be shown to everybody. That's, again, a choice that you make. But if you don't know how to use the tool, then it's going to be more difficult for you to do that. But I think, just like a car, we have the responsibility of knowing how to drive, right? Or the vehicle. We have a responsibility for knowing where the brakes are, where the lights, where the windshield wipers. And when we use software, regardless of whatever software it is, but especially software that exposes our content publicly, we have that same responsibility as a driver to know how the vehicle works. So I would like to hear from you, 503-231-8187. And we have Kyle in Portland.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Kyle. Welcome to the Digital Divide.
Thanks for having me on. I just thought I would call and give my two cents on the whole mousetrap.
Sure.
And I think that people don't realize that their attention is being monetized when they go onto Facebook. And that's maybe what Ira was talking about, that you go on for your own personal purposes, and it's not necessarily that easy to find out the way that your own activity is being monetized, which is how Facebook makes its billions of dollars.
Well, tell me more about that. So you're saying that when you go on Facebook, the information that you put can be monetized. So,
well, actually, it's the information that you consume is monetized.
And how is that?
They're selling advertising to make huge amounts of money. Their market share is huge.
Yes, that's right. That's how they, I mean, he's out front about that in the testimony. You know, he said, how do you provide this free service? And he said, we sell ads, right?
Yeah, but people don't necessarily realize that the way they sell ads, or that the way that anybody sell ads, is to monetize your attention. So when you spend 1, 2, 3 hours a day cruising Facebook, that time of yours is being monetized in order to focus ads on you.
Right. So I agree with you. What happens when you're on Facebook, if you wanted to sell an ad, or if I wanted to sell an ad, then I could take a post that I made, and I could create an audience based on things that people have expressed that they're interested in or that they like. And so you're right. I could target an audience who has spent time on Facebook.
If Ira didn't know that he was being monetized every time he opened up Facebook, he might feel like he's been lured into a mousetrap with cheese.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that, right?
I was just calling to kind of, you know, maybe discuss what Ira's mousetrap actually was, you know, and that was the trap of not knowing how you're being monetized, because it's just, people don't think about it.
Well, that's right. People don't think about it. That's what we're trying to do, is make people think about it, right? So I really appreciate your call. All right, we've got more callers. Thank you so much, Kyle. All right, we have Edie in Portland.
Hello. So for over a dozen years ago, people were saying that, and Facebook was bragging directly, that it was collecting a lot of data on people and selling that. And trying to make lots of ways in which people would be dependent upon and attracted to it. So now the pretend story, the otherwise, isn't very persuasive to me. But my question is, if I want to find out about events that are happening, and Facebook won't let me find out about it unless I log in and tell Facebook who I am and all my connections, how can I get the information without giving them my information?
Well, that's part of the price of admission into Facebook. So you know, if you want to be able to be in the Facebook environment, you have to log in. That's how it works. So,
well, it's inconsistent because I can go to the same Facebook, same organization, same type of events, and sometimes read a whole bunch of events and comments and videos and pictures, and I don't need to tell them who I am. And other times, when it's really urgent for me to find out if I can be at the right place at the right time, it won't let me do it without logging in. And because those groups have political or religious content, or I'm looking at information across the political spectrum, and I want to know who's planning to do what when, I don't necessarily want them or the police or their advertisers to know who I am. How can I get that information that is sometimes available and sometimes not without giving them my information?
Well, if you want to use Facebook, you have to log in and you have to use your real profile. So I don't know how you can find maybe alternate sources, local newspapers or the news, but Facebook specific, if you want to access the content, you have to log in with your profile.
I've been accessing information sometimes without logging in.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I don't know how that works to access Facebook without logging in. I'm not aware of that, so I really can't answer that question. I don't know how that would work.
Okay.
But I thank you for your call today.
Out of the time. Good day.
Thank you. And Jack in Portland.
Hi, yeah, I just had a comment that maybe people are up in arms about the Facebook thing because it's a private thing. I worked on the mayoral campaign in 2012, and the candidate was able to access something called Auristar, which I think is even more invasive, and it's from the government. It's a state Secretary of State sponsored thing where when you sign up to vote in the primary, you have to declare what party you're in, and then it's all kinds of information like phone number, whether you have a hunting license, anything that you've done through the state. And we were able to, when we made calls for donations, we were able to know whether somebody was a hunter. So maybe the issue of like guns was important to them. And right. I don't see how this is any different.
Well, I don't see it as being different either. Its data is collected. I do take exception that Facebook doesn't quote unquote sell the data that it has about you, but it does allow people, developers, to create apps that ask you if you want to use that app. Do you agree? Right. What my own personal kind of beef about this is that people willingly shared their data, people consented, and without taking the time or understanding, because computers can be complicated for some people, or for a variety of reasons. But regardless, they still click that button that said, "I consent to share my information," and in this case, their friends' profiles. So how they got their information, who knows? But it is similar, right? It's like allows you to target an audience.
Well, it's even worse because you have to register on there to vote in the primary as one party or the other. Auristar is a governmental agency that's collecting this data, and they sell it to the candidates running. So it's even, I think, even more of a hypocritical for the senators to be criticizing Zuckerberg
right.
when they've purchased these things from the state that are not voluntary. It's not like an app. It's your right to vote.
Well, that's right. That is interesting. When we register to vote, we're actually not consenting to share that information. At least I'm going to have to say that I'm aware of. Maybe I'm ignorant that there's some tiny print somewhere in my voter registration that says, sure, this information could be shared. I don't know that there isn't. I'm not going to assume that, although I would be really, really disappointed to find out that that was true.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks so much. Right. All right. Okay, our lines are open, 503-231-8187. We're talking about Facebook. We're talking about privacy, understanding how it works, understanding our responsibility in the environment. When we understand how Facebook works, we understand that any data that we share is consensual on our part, I think that changes, it changes kind of the feeling of the news that's out there. I know I have seen people post on my own feed during this scandal that just Facebook sucks, you know, two words. And when I see that, I feel bad, because I think, you know, Facebook was simply, they weren't unwitting and they weren't innocent, but they didn't take your data and give it to anybody. We gave our data to someone else, or our friends gave data to someone else. So that's, you know, that's really the crux of it. Anyway, I'm very excited that we were able to talk about this today. I'm happy. Thank you for calling in and sharing your information. Very excited. Next month, I'm hoping to, so to speak, next month, I'm hoping that we'll have an interview with Barbara Ehrenreich. I'm setting up an interview with her now. She has a new book out called Natural Causes, where she talks about, is it really necessary to try to prolong your life after you hit a certain age? And medical interference and enjoying our years versus, you know, closely monitoring our activities to try to squeeze out, you know, a few extra months or years. And does that even work? So that'll be an interesting conversation. I'm really looking forward to that. Thanks so much for tuning in to The Digital Divide. You can catch us every second Friday of the month. And this episode will be online at kboo.fm in the archives. You can just search for Digital Divide and it should pop right up. Our fund drive, our membership drive, is going to be starting in a week. And of course, we are nearly 90% listener sponsored. So your donations do have an impact. And KBOO doesn't sell your data to anybody or even share it, at least not supposed to. So be sure and tune in every morning at 11 for exciting programs on KBOO Portland. Calling this burden, this falling, the world turning. This what I thought I knew, this what I thought was true, this I understood, this in the deep wood, this ah, there I stood, a child so fair. This on a certain square, this down the dirty stairs, this to see the table set, this with golden chairs, this ah, to follow, 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 follow.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Is Home Birthright for Me? On Sunday, April 15th at 5 p.m. at the Northeast Whole Foods Market in Portland, 3535 Northeast 15th Avenue. Local home birth midwives will show the film Why Not Home, followed by a QA session with the midwives. Again, that's Is Home Birthright for Me? On Sunday, April 15th at 5 p.m. at Whole Foods Market, 3535 Northeast 15th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
K- KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Eco Film Festival's Earth Day weekend celebration from April 20th through the 22nd at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Portland Eco Film Festival features films about the environment, nature conservation, outdoor adventure, agriculture, and community wellness. This Earth Day weekend celebration is four screenings over 3 days featuring the films The Reluctant Radical, Beyond the Big Fish, and more. Again, that's the Portland Eco Film Festival's Earth Day weekend celebration from April 20th through the 22nd at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Friday, April 13th, 2018. The Wall Street Journal has reported that Donald Trump is currently building a case to fire Robert Mueller's boss, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, and deploying outside allies to attack the Russia probe on television. Members of the Coalition for Ethics in Washington pointed out today that if Trump fires Rosenstein to impede the investigation against him, it will spark a constitutional crisis not seen since Nixon and Watergate. In other national news, Trump announced today that he is pardoning Scooter Libby, the former aide to Dick Cheney, who was accused of lying to the FBI during the investigation of the politically motivated leaking of the identity of a CIA agent. The incident took place during the George W. Bush administration and was a huge controversy at the time. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said today that this pardon sends a troubling signal to the president's allies that obstructing justice will be rewarded. She said that it also poses a threat to the integrity of the special counsel investigation and to our democracy. In international news, another Palestinian was killed today by Israeli forces in the third straight week of nonviolent protests at the border wall. This marks the 35th unarmed Palestinian killed by the Israeli military in protests since March 30th. 363 Palestinians were wounded by Israeli forces today, at least 30 of whom were hit by live gunfire. 14 medics were among those wounded. In Portland, supporters of the Palestinians' right to protest will gather for a vigil outside the federal building of Southwest 3rd and Main at 5 p.m. today. They are calling for an end to the Israeli attacks on unarmed protesters and also an end to the decades